This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to Bob, Groz, and Tom. With Groz and Tom, the day after a pretty seismic day in the Pacific Northwest, we've got a busy show. Pete Carroll coming up momentarily, we believe.
Yep.
Michael Bradley Alombre will join us at 1 o'clock, as he always does, and Paul Moyer, fresh off his trip to London, will join us at 2 o'clock today. So we're waiting on Pete Carroll. We'll go to that any moment.
And I'm sure we'll be getting, first and foremost, just comments from him, thoughts from him on the passing of Paul Allen. That news came down yesterday, I mean, literally, as we came off the air. We left here, went in the other room, and then that came down, and it was one of those moments where you're like, whoa, I thought he'd
found out
a week and a half ago,
right,
that he was sick
again. He tweeted out
that
he had a recurrence of his lymphoma and was confident in fighting it off, and it was a big surprise to hear that announcement. And it has seismic undertakings. It's obviously a huge national and international story.
Yeah,
it's a guy who's responsible. You can argue, I don't know how well you'd argue it though, he's responsible for changing the face of the world.
Yeah, there are as you look through history, there are handfuls of people in each era that do that. I mean, we could start to name
right.
them here, but Paul Allen, absolutely part of that. I mean, changing our lives in more ways than just technologically, Groz. I mean, if you think about it, we'll hopefully get into a lot of this later. Just the idea that he saved a football team here from leaving. I mean, would I even be here? Would any of us, would this station even exist if the Seahawks weren't in Seattle? Just as a small example.
Right.
That's not even a worldwide one. I'm just thinking about the people who work in this building.
Yeah, I mean, there's several prongs. I mean, there's the international and Microsoft Windows and the impact it's had on everyone's
yep.
life and these things that have sprung out from that. Seminal, you know, it's like Eli Whitney and the cotton gin. He's one of the great inventors of all time, number one. Then as a sports fan, and don't forget the Blazers. He bought the Blazers in 89. There was some question about their future that he maintained them up there. He came in after the Seahawks had moved. They had already moved. They had already set up practice facilities down in Southern California at a high school. And he came in and bought the team. He came up with a public-private partnership to build CenturyLink. It was Questfield at the time. He also was instrumental in making sure that it would be soccer-friendly, so you can give him an assist for bringing in the Sounders. And, of course, the Sounders were run out of the Seahawks, Paul Allen's company, for years. I actually have a couple of anecdotes with Paul Allen. I actually emceed an event that he did in probably 1992, and it was for this company called Starwave. And the idea was an online sports site. It became ESPN.com.
Oh.
And it began as Starwave, and I think Danny worked on it. There's other Greg Johns, other writers from this area who worked on it. And they had a rollout at a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore called Two Dagos from Texas. That used to be in Belltown, one of the few places in Belltown. And I was asked to emcee it, and I remember standing inside there and really kind of excited to meet Paul Allen. I mean, it was Paul Allen, the guy who invented
right.
Microsoft, basically, with Bill Gates. I mean, he was a true star, in my opinion. And I remember walking in there and going, so is Paul Allen really coming? And getting a tap on the shoulder and turning around, and it was him.
Oh, no kidding.
Looking completely unassuming, as most people talk about. I mean, I think he had a windbreaker on and was wearing sneakers, which jumped out at me. Was very soft-spoken, knew who I was, which was a thrill. I mean, an absolute thrill. And then it was just sort of a low-key rollout of that program. But that was, he basically started web sports sites, I suppose, is a
so
fair
that,
thing to say.
That became ESPN.com?
It became ESPN.com. Started here as Starwave.
Wow. I mean,
he ran the Sporting News Network for years, so he employed our pal Bob Stelton for a while.
Ombre.
And Ombre. I moved into Paul Allen's first Vulcan, his parent company. Their first South Lake Union facility was 2200 Westlake, and I moved in there, so I've been a tenant of his for 12 years. I was a partner of his for a little bit of time in a restaurant, a C-Star restaurant that was in South Lake Union a while. Had a chance in 2006, the first Super Bowls with the Seahawks sitting there in Detroit. I remember at my old station with my old partner being told that, hey, Paul Allen's going to come by and you're going to have a chance to talk to him, and thinking, yeah, right. Sure we are.
Well, who came up and told you that?
Gary Wright.
Oh, okay.
Gary Wright did. And you tend to take him at his word, but, you know, we weren't the flagship station, of course. And we got Pete Carroll, so we'll tell these stories later. Let's go to Pete.
He's ready. We've all been deeply moved by the sudden passing of our owner, Paul Allen. We're still in the midst of dealing with all of just the emotions and the concerns and all that come to you immediately at a time like this. And so around here, we're all hanging together and staying really close and just making sure that we're doing all the things that we need to do to carry on and really maintain the effort and the spirit that Paul always stood for, and which was extraordinary achievement, extraordinary idealist, keep pushing always to do great things. And I feel fortunate that we're the ones that get to carry on the messaging in that regard. And we have this extraordinary way to connect with the people in the area, you know, through our play. And sometimes sports just serves perfectly when you need it. And this is a good time for this. This was a great man and an extraordinary guy to work with and to compete with and a good friend and all of that. So we, the families and everybody, our hearts go out to everyone, and we'll miss every aspect of our relationship. But with that, we're going to miss a good friend.
So, Coach, Deborah Horn from Cairo 7, we did know, because we saw the news release from Mr. Allen on October 1st, that his cancer had returned. He sounded so hopeful in that. Did you, any of you, have a sense that the end was so near?
Well, he was very hopeful. He that's the way his messaging was, and he said it directly to me. He was ready for the battle, and he had been through it before. So he was, he sent like he would, being a good, a good leader. He communicated to us that there was hope, and he was going for it. But he had become ill. He had become, unable to do some of the things that he had normally been able to do, and travel and going to the games and things like that, because of his, his illness. But so there were some signs in that regard, and he was weakened. Yeah, he was weakened. So, but it still happened very suddenly.
You said that you would not have left USC if not for your belief in Paul. What was it at that stage when you were considering whether to leave or not that struck you about Paul and made you want to come to school?
He was able to pass along the spirit that he now we know, I know, of wanting to go for it, and kind of no holds barred, and he was going to clear it for us to have a great chance to do great things, and he wanted to, he wanted to win championships, and that's what he was all about, and he wasn't going to let anything get in the way. And he was really clear about that, and the message that came through was really one that I hadn't heard in that fashion, with that commitment and that spirit of it, and that's what made it even possible to even be in the conversation about it. And so and Todd Lewicki was really the one that, passed along the messaging at the time and reassured in a way that was, I trusted, and I found trust early in that conversation and relationship that became one that was so well-founded, as I learned later on as we got together and really started going about it and battling together and doing the things we needed to do to put the program together.
How familiar did you become of the circumstances around his buying the team 21 years ago, and what would have happened had that not happened?
Yeah, I'm not real. I knew that it was happening at the time. I had some people that were involved that I knew way back when, but not until I got here and realized, the statement that he made by taking the stand and really standing up for the place that he loved. I think all of the things that Paul has done has demonstrated to us what we all wish we would have done given that opportunity. The extraordinary wealth that came in their way because of the great ideas and the concepts and the principles opened up a doorway for him to give back to the place that he was so connected to, and he did it any way he could, and he's always been that way. And it happened to come out in the world of sports and this fantastic franchise that he was able to construct and support, and the stadium and all of the things, and the 12s and all of the amazing things that have come because of that, his inspiration early on. I didn't know about it way back when, but was surely made aware of it here in the last decade, and it's been a blast being part of it.
Coach, I spoke to Mike Holmgren yesterday, and he described Paul Allen as the best owner he ever worked for.
Yeah, well, he's certainly that. I echo that with Mike. This, you couldn't ask for a better guy to support what we're trying to do here. Paul had a great thought about he wanted to put people in charge and give them what they needed and the resource they needed, and then he'd go for it. He wanted you to go for it, and he didn't want you to hold back. He wanted to at all times be pushing ahead, and that's all we could ever hope for, you know. He was not a hands-on owner, but his spirit was on everything that we were doing, and he was. The message was clear how he wanted us to go about our business. That's why John and I were in such concert from the beginning. You couldn't ask for a better format and a better setup, and that's why I wound up, you know, finding my way here. So, I think, you know, Coach Mike was on it.
Will you stay?
Absolutely.
Coach, has nothing to do with it. About the succession plan. What happens next?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't feel like it's time to be engaging into that conversation. You know, we're more into the conversation about recognizing, you know, what just took place and how to respect Paul and his, you know, his desires and all of that. There's plenty of time to talk about all that stuff, and it's not even a factor in our minds. I know, and I understand the interest and all that. There'll be plenty of time.
Is there anything you want to say to fans, though, in terms of just reassuring them?
Well, I don't know how our fans couldn't be assured that we're on course. Nothing's changing. Paul wouldn't want us to do anything different than what we're doing, which is to go for it and to represent in every way that we can until you can't. And we're going to go for it just in that fashion. And I can't imagine that just in this season, as they watched our club and watched our club start to grow and turn, that they can't find the excitement and the enthusiasm. And I don't think there's any reason to think anything other than positive and upbeat in support of that.
This morning on the radio, you said that he knew there was a space for people to be different. How did that spirit embody the team and in your style, and how does the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, we've been a little bit different around here, you know. I couldn't have loved the way he embraced that, you know, his liberal thinking, his openness, his kind of zeal for the arts and fun and game and what was different. He didn't want to be the same as everybody else. He wanted to do special, unique, extraordinary things. And he appreciated whenever we were going through whatever the phases that we've been through and the stuff that we've encountered over our years together. He was always supportive. He was never embarrassed by something that a player would say or how they acted. He knew that there was a time and a place if we could deal with it properly. He always felt that there was ways that we could work our way through things if we were really resourceful, and he was always helpful when necessary. So he was just a good dude, and he was fun to do things with, and he was. For me, you know, I knew that I could freewheel and figure out stuff and go for it and throw the ideas by him, and almost always he would have suggestions, but always be in support of not trying to be like everybody else, but doing things in a unique fashion, and that's we fit very well together in that sense.
You could pretty regularly have pregame conversations on the field. What were the nature of those like, and what kind of information was he in?
Yeah, he just wanted to know how much we were going to blitz, or if we had any trick plays and stuff, basically. By that time, that close to game time, there would always be questions about guys who were hurt or, you know, were healthy and all that kind of stuff. Always want to know about the quarterback and what we were hoping to do and how we're going to defend the other quarterback. So it's pretty basic, fundamental stuff that a fan would want to know going into the game if they could ask the head coach, you know. Unfortunately, I didn't have enough good answers for him. I wish I had better answers for him. But for the most part, we just kind of had fun with it and just kind of enjoy the excitement of the day and what was coming and the challenge and what we were trying to accomplish and all that.
What will you miss about Paul Allen as your boss?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Now, I'm going to miss the spirit of his vision. You know, look what he's stood for. Look what he's done. Look at all of the extraordinary, amazing places he's taken us to because he could and because it was there to be challenged. You know, whether it's in space or whether it's under the ocean, whether it's in the farthest reaches of the globe and chasing diseases and freeing animals and saving the elephants and, I mean, all the amazing things that he stood for. Just being around an amazing individual like that, you know, that had that kind of vision, and he it never was about the resources. It never was about the amounts of things. It was about the challenge of discovery and stuff that was so great, and it was so much fun to be associated with. I mean, I haven't been very fortunate to be around anybody like that, of that nature, and so I'm feel very fortunate. I'll miss the heck out of him.
Did anything stand out to you about how he interacted with players or anything you saw there? You've talked about your relationship with him, but anything with the players?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything extraordinary about it. His openness, you know, I think maybe that's what would be most special. His openness to people from all different backgrounds and makeups and all of that. He was a very open, wide open thinker and liberal thinker and very receptive, to the uniqueness and the differences that people had. You've heard me talk about uniqueness a lot about our players and all that. That's just echoing the kind of way that Paul would look at things. You know, he wanted us to find special qualities in everything that we were doing and in the people that we were dealing with, and we were in concert and to the nth with that one.
Do you have a favorite Paul Allen story, memory?
Yeah, I would think that, we take it back to the Super Bowl. To have a chance to be together, you know, with the guy that meant so much to him. And he's a winner now. He wanted to be a champion. And to be up on the stage with him, you know, in the crowd and the confetti's flying and all that, and to just be there with him. That's my favorite moment with Paul. Now, there was a great moment later on that night when he was on stage and he was playing and he was hitting it. And he thought he was Eddie Vedder or something up there. He was going, you know. But I think that was the great moment that we got to share. He got to have it, you know, because this is, you can have all the money in the world, but it's really hard to have that world championship, and it meant everything to him. So to be able to share that with him was amazing.
What has it meant to you to be part of his legacy and what he's built here in Seattle with the Seahawks team?
Well, it's been a life's experience, really. This one, you know, I had this amazing time in down in Southern California, and would never really could imagine that we could match something like that. But we were able to do that here, you know, and come up and you know, connect with the community, represent, you know, a huge area that people cared so much about. This turned out to be a life's experience, you know, for us and my family and all, and we've been able to share in a really unforgettable ways.
Have you thought about how you'll honor him the rest of the season?
Yeah, I'm going to do it by competing. Yeah, I'm going to give him everything I got.
You mentioned the Super Bowl win. I guess after the Super Bowl loss, how did, I guess, what were your interactions with Paul, and was he at all a support or someone you kind of talked through that game with?
Yeah, we did all of that. He was, as far as I was concerned, and the people that, you know, the staff and the people we dealt with and all that, he was just as championship in win and victory as he was in the defeat. We immediately went to work, you know, on what was coming up next and all of that since we turned the corner. But he was, you know, he supported John and I in a beautiful fashion.
Coach, any specific plans for a tribute the next game?
That's just getting kicked around now. There are some things that are going to happen. No specifics on that yet. The ideas are, you know, being formulated.
Do you know when the funeral is or anything you can tell us about that?
Yeah, at this point, we don't know anything.
The performance in London, I guess, just your thoughts on it now, a couple days removed from how you guys played.
Well, it's fun that we have a bye in this regard, because we had so much fun there and it was such a good game for us, and we get to kind of have some fun with it for a little bit longer. We're just starting to move, you know, and we can feel that happening, and to have a nice game like that, then go into a break, and you know, we kick into the last 10 games of this regular season as we start this thing up. This is a good time for us, and we have very high hopes that we can keep getting better, and we're just getting rolling. You know, I'll never not be frustrated by the way we started this season, but we're moving, and this is kind of how we've done it over the years, and we got a chance, you know, to be a really nice team, and guys in this room know that. And their energy coming out of that game, they had a great time. It was a great locker room, and we had a blast.
You said on your show this morning that you could see the future. Can you kind of, do you like the way the pieces are falling into place as far as?
Yeah, very much so. And I'm very familiar with feeling the kind of the focus that has been generated by the stuff that the coaches have been doing, turning our football, getting it together, playing good defense and moving the ball in offense and on the ground, kicking the ball well and playing, good, solid football. That gets you a lot of success in any level of the game of football. And there's a real style about it that we can sense now. And so it's 1 week at a time, but we just need to keep riding that and see how far it takes us.
Question I didn't ask was, how did Paul Allen get along with the players? When I talked to Mike Holmgren, he said he would stand there as they were coming back and shake hands with each of them. Did he continue that under your tenure?
Yeah, for the most part. He's quiet. He's a quiet man. And very directly, very humbly. And he dealt with the players. And he was a little he was shy. He was a little shy in general. He wasn't really outgoing and pushy in any way. He was very receptive and all that, but pretty quiet guy in general.
Did you feel at all during that first drive that you were going to score there? Like you had an opening drive in the run?
Yeah, that's been a long time. I didn't talk about that. That's been a long time since we had a touchdown and way too many weeks to count. I can only talk about not starting fast for so long. Once in a while, you got to get one. It was really a nice job by the offense. The calling of the plays, setting the tone for the game, I think all happened in the first drive. I don't know how many was it, 13 plays or 15 plays? 14 plays. Yeah, 14 plays there, and, we scored a couple times, which is good. We've had to score a couple times in drives so far. I don't mind that. We pulled that off. But it's just a good statement. It's just good for us to get that behind us.
Seems like, dating back to training camp, Frank Clark has always had setbacks, but he always seems to play well. He had that wrist thing at the start, the food poisoning, and then this past game, I know you said he was got sick or something. What have you kind of seen from him in that pass rush, just continuing to show that he's elite on that defense?
Yeah, he's an extraordinary competitor now because he's overcoming things all the time. He's overcome a lot of things in his life that's made him who he is, and he just seems to respond and bounces back. He comes up with a really good frame of mind even though things are difficult, and finds the positive to go for, and it generates effort. He's such an exciting player in terms of his effort and his motor that we've always talked about. Even when times are tough, he brings it. He's been practicing at a really high level for us. When he was sick a week ago, but when he's out there, I've just noted it numbers of times. It's just his effort and how he's, and it's carrying over the way he plays. Frank's doing a great job, and he was really explosive in this game. He was giving him all kinds of trouble. It's great to see.
The illness he had in the second half, did that have anything to do with what he was dealing with last week?
I don't know that. He was sick getting to the plane, so he was not feeling well. So I don't know if it's connected. It seemed like it was similar, but the docs are working on him. I don't know what's going on with that right now.
It looked like he was rushing out of a two-point stance a few times Sunday. What's the thinking behind that?
Just mix it. He feels comfortable at times. Sometimes it's for disguise. He practices that way. We like him in both stances, but I like him when he's down in three-point stance for the most part and flying off the football. I think he scares offensive linemen a little more so with his get-offs there.
Did David and Chris in that seventh round, did you expect them to be contributing the way they are so early in their career?
I had a better feel for Chris than David. The level of play, at Oki State versus directionally Oklahoma, we give him a hard time, but I don't know the name of the school. I'm sorry. Apologize to the school. No, I didn't know that, but I thought Chris really had a chance to be something very unique, and we loved David's strength and the power that he played with. It's just the level of play was hard to determine, how he would transition. He looks like he's going to really have a terrific season. He's really off to a great start, and there's a lot of things we can still do with him. We're really just breaking him in.
So how were you able to control how can I not remember the name? Marshawn Lynch during the game, at least from my understanding.
I had trouble remembering his name also.
But how were you able to control him in the way that you were? Is he just old?
I thought he played a terrific football game. He was playing so hard. He was playing as tough as I could ever remember him playing, and he made some really good runs and catch and run things happen. he gave it everything he had, and our guys were hitting him as hard as they could hit him. It was really, I thought it was a really obvious demonstration of respect on both sides, both sides were going for it, and I thought he played really well. They just couldn't quite get him loose.
How's Ed doing?
Ed Dixon's in really good shape. Knocking on wood, hoping we can make it through. We think he's going to be able to go coming out next week. I'll tell you too. KJ has had a couple of really good days too, and we think he's on track for getting back to compete to practice. He'll practice with us and compete to play next week when we return.
You said you've seen this before. What can you say about the defensive secondary in terms of, those guys are young. It looks like they're
trying. We're getting going. Yeah, I think we're getting going. We're off to a good start right now. I like the playmaking. The physical nature of them fits the way we've always wanted to play. I really like that Shaq has stepped from first year one to year two and playing so consistently at corner. And it seems that Trey is off to a very good start starting as a rookie. At the other side, Bradley McDougal's been the leader back there, and Tedrick now is taking over and at the safety spot. And they're getting after it pretty good. We got a lot of tests coming up. We got a great one coming up with Detroit and Matthew Stafford, coming up in another week. And we just keep taking one step at a time, but they're making good progress, and we're holding the numbers down. We're staying on top pretty well, and the ball's been coming our way some. So it's been a very good start to the season for these guys. I think a lot of people would have wondered otherwise and thought that wasn't going to happen. And so I'm excited to show you that these guys can ball, and they got a chance to do some really good things and really add to this team.
Nick Vanette's
status, how's his back? He has a continuing issues that he's dealing with. He doesn't have an injury, but he's got kind of a condition that he's working with, and he's doing some special work this week and next week to be back. We think he'll be back, but it is something we're monitoring all the way, along the way.
Similar way you said he's dealing with the first couple of years of his career?
Yes. Yeah, it's related.
Did KJ have any sort of setback in his recovery?
Quite a while ago. Yes, he did. After about it was week three or so, I think it was, coming back. We were really, we were going to try to get him back in 3 or 4 weeks. And crazy to me, but he was going for it, and it just couldn't quite turn the corner. So we had to step back a bit. And now he's back on track again.
How's Shane Green?
He'll be back. Yeah, he's in good shape. He ran well at the Grove and looked good in England. As long as he can cross the ocean and come back, we'll be okay. I know nothing about that. I made that up.
One more, J.D. McKissick.
J.D.'s his timeline is a little different than Ed's, but he's doing great. And as soon as he can come back, he'll be raring to come back, of course.
The office was described as like high-tech and intellectual over the offseason. How much of that is what Russell does in the movie that we don't see before the player even does that?
Russell's doing more than he's ever done before. He's orchestrating and controlling the play calling and adjustments at the line of scrimmage when he can. And he's just been brought to a different level of responsibility, and he's doing a nice job with it. And you can see him putting us in you can't see it. He's putting us in position to run the ball effectively now, in as well as in the passing game. So he's grown. Yeah, he's improved.
Coach, I know you said you're going to carry on in Paul Allen's legacy and carry on the work that he started, but can you be more specific on how he will influence you specifically as you move forward and the team?
Well, I think just wanting to do my part and give back to in gratitude, and appreciation for all that he's given myself and my family, and I know all of our coaches and families. We're going to battle for him, and either competing or you're not. And that's kind of the way I think we can best give tribute to what he would want us to do. I'd love to live in his image of wanting to win championships and keep moving forward and do great things. I don't see any reason why that's not still out there. We're going for it. I feel pretty good about telling you that that's how we're going about it.
How did you feel about splitting up those snaps in the backfield, getting Penny back integrated? How do you feel about that balance with Chris?
I thought it was pretty good this week. Somewhere in the middle of the third quarter, I said to Rashad that, get ready. Fourth quarter is yours, knowing that we had a chance to run the clock and do all that because we're ahead, I knew he was going to get a good shot to get in there and just get going. He just needs to play. And He did fine. He did a good job. So yeah, I only got 9 or 10 carries in the fourth quarter. You know, by the end of the fourth quarter, so Chris had a good mix. Mike had a good mix, I'm telling you, I can't tell you what's going to happen this week. Next time we go out, we're going to start the game off. Chris is going to start the game. Mike will be coming off the bench. Rashad will be coming off the bench and looking for their reps. And from there, we'll make the decision of what's necessary for the game. To be able to do that only makes us stronger down the road. Those three guys to play that much just makes us better going forward. So I'm okay about doing that when we get the opportunity.
Anything else? Thank you.
All right, that's Pete Carroll in his weekly press conference. Obviously, a lot of thoughts there on the passing of Paul Allen. I want to get back to some of the stuff he talked about with the injuries, and we'll let Groz finish his stories as well. Next, we'll continue on Bob, Groz, and Tom.
You're listening to Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
This is Bob, Groz, and Tom. We'll be catching up with El Hombre coming up at the top of the hour, then Paul Moyer later on in the show. Hear a little bit about how London went for everybody. Obviously, it went well for the Seahawks there, Groz, as we just heard Pete Carroll talking about. Really not that much to ask about from a football standpoint because the game was so clean.
Yep.
Right?
There was nothing negative that happened. No major injuries happened. Your pass rush was back. You got Baldwin involved. You ran the ball well.
Yeah, it was a lot of Frank Clark and what inspired his play and even guys like Rashad Penny, right? How was the running back? How were they able to balance it, all game long?
It seems like the national perspective on it is how bad the Raiders are. Not taking anything away from the Seahawks, but just that may have been the worst performance any team had this year.
Was it really worse than what we saw from the Giants on Thursday? I didn't think it was.
I did.
Really?
I thought the Raiders were god-awful. God-awful.
If you were to put the Raiders against the Giants on a neutral field, I think it might be competitive. And when I say competitive, I mean like 3-3.
I think the Giants would handle them.
Wow.
I think the Raiders are just the worst team.
All right. Well, our perception of that situation is a lot different.
Incapable of rising to the occasion at any time.
Well, I think they've at least... Well, never mind. We'll maybe talk about that a little bit later. A couple of good news items here, though.
Yeah,
injury-wise. Now, here's the words Pete used. KJ Wright will compete to practice next week, hoping to play.
Parsing that means he hopes he's ready to practice.
Hopes he's ready to practice. He will try as hard as he can to practice.
And if he practices, he'll be ready to play.
Well, he could be ready to play.
Well, if he practices, he's ready to play. That's sort of how it works with most guys. If they practice and they're okay and they go through a week of practice, they play.
Yeah, through the whole week. If he makes it through and he's by Friday and everything. But he may practice a little and figure out that things aren't okay.
Entirely possible.
So that's good news there. And I heard Brady ask if he had any setbacks along the way, which is something that I had just assumed.
Week three.
Because we thought it was just going to be a couple of weeks, like Pete said there. And then, so I guess during week three, like you said, that's when the setback was. That's what's kept him out this long. Certainly it'll be good to have him back. And a guy also that we haven't seen any of at all in Ed Dixon, also hoping to go next game.
Well, it's just good timing because Nick Vannett is banged up.
Yep.
We know Will Dissly is gone for the season. Dixon was, I think he was the first free agent they brought in, was he not? The first guy they signed, or at least he was one of them after last season.
Yeah, I seem to remember.
They let Jimmy Graham go, that they brought in Dixon almost immediately, and we talked about it as maybe a return to the Zach Miller days of having a blocking tight end.
I remember having about a week's worth of discussion about whether or not he could block, and the answer was yes.
Yeah.
We were all pretty, well, at least I was. I was relieved that was at least part of their plan going forward.
That was his strength in theory. So yeah, that's a big get, especially with Vannett's back. It's his back that's bothering.
Yeah,
Vannett.
It's a back condition. Yeah. I guess it's the same thing that's been bothering him for quite a while there. So yeah, good news there. Obviously, aside from the passing of Paul Allen, and Pete had plenty of nice thoughts about him, and we'll see where this whole thing goes. As far as the future of the Seahawk organization, right?
Well, it's huge. I mean, you're talking about a change in ownership. I mean, you had the ultimate, in terms of public perception, hands-off owner. Paul Allen was, I'm not going to say he was more passionate about the Blazers, but he was to begin with. That was his first team. He was a basketball guy. He went out and actively sought them where he was pursued to buy the Seahawks. The Seahawks gave him a championship, though, something the Blazers have not done. And it became very special for him, but he didn't go to many NFL meetings, so he wasn't a fixture in that sort of venue. And you just think about other teams and other owners. The Seahawks now are going to have another owner.
Yeah.
Even his sister, if she hangs on to the team, and I was talking about it with Clayton, I don't know why she wouldn't. I don't know why you'd let an NFL team go. But,
well, it's only going to appreciate in value.
Well, that's what
unless
I mean.
You just flat out don't want to be involved
right,
at
and
all.
And there's no sense of that yet, and she's going to have to become a little more public, obviously, but she may be a completely different animal. I mean, you don't know. You have no idea.
Well, like I asked you while we were listening to Pete there, wouldn't it be interesting if we got a new owner here who was more meddlesome? And the answer is, well, that's going to happen regardless.
That's a guarantee.
Because Paul Allen was... at least as far as owners go, was reclusive, not meddlesome. He wasn't
completely
involved
reclusive.
In personnel or football affairs at all.
Well, he made very few statements, announcements. I mean, he was visible when he raised the 12-man flag, but that was really it. I mean, he couldn't have been more opposite than just about every owner in the NFL.
Yeah, and that's not to say that that's a bad thing, right, when you bring in another owner. I mean, there's 31 other owners who are more involved than he was, and not all of them are... Not overbearing.
I think involved is the wrong way to put it. He was involved, but he just wasn't public about his involvement, where other owners are more public about it.
Was he making football decisions, though?
He was talking with his football guys and things like that. I mean, but who knows? He wasn't public about it. Whereas he had other owners will be public about it. It'll be a huge change. It's something that I think fans here got used to. I mean, he replaced Ken Behring, and you don't know that name. You weren't here when he was around, and that name has been a forgotten name for a long time, but that was 22 years ago, and you had an out-of-town owner who moved the team. That used to be the biggest fear.
Right.
That's why Howard Schultz, when he took over the Sonics, you know, was a big deal because it was a local owner. So this town, this city used to fear out-of-town ownership.
Still does.
To a degree, yeah.
I would think, we'll see where the storyline goes. I mean, up until the day where there is a new owner, if there's a new owner, we'll be talking about it.
Well,
I
think, you know, no one's going to move the Seahawks out of Seattle now.
No, but one step at a time.
Right,
Let's see where the ownership
issue
goes first.
This is a very successful owner who's stepping aside, though. That's the bottom line, who, even if he wasn't involved in football decisions, allowed the freedom of his guys to make those decisions, and it was very, very effective.
Well, speaking of... meddlesome owners. There's one owner that I think is scapegoating the wrong guy, the wrong player. Wait a minute, what's next?
It's Bob Gross and Tom.
Hold up. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
What?
A couple of stories here for you, and wait a minute, what? Gross, we'll start with this. My team, we were just talking about meddlesome owners. I'm not sure that I would call John Mara of the Giants a meddlesome owner. He's having to answer some questions right now. That's
and
for
he
sure.
is.
Yeah, right. But I get the feeling that there's a couple of different camps. Whenever you have a bad team, some people are going to blame the quarterback, the head coach, the organization, and maybe some of the other players.
There's plenty of blame to go around.
Right, there definitely is. I think that's the point of the story, is that there is plenty of blame to go around. And it starts at the top. But there's a lot of anti-Odell Beckham people out there. I've been in that camp at different times.
Sure.
I don't think right now he's the problem. If you were to start listing problems...
He's a problem.
He's maybe like fifth, maybe third or fourth down the line.
Right.
Something like that.
Bigger issues.
Right. And I'm not crazy about John Mara singling him out.
I wish he would create the headlines by his play on the field as opposed to what he says and does off the field. I think he needs to do a little more playing, a little less talking.
Okay, I kind of agree with that. But again, when it comes to the losing, I think Eli is playing worse than Odell is at this point.
That made me think about Paul Allen for a second.
Why?
Because he never did that.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
I thought you were going to say because he did. I'd be surprised.
No, he never did it ever. I mean, it's just, you know, you got me thinking about how different it's going to be for the Seahawks to have an owner who actually may comment on players.
Right, if asked.
Yeah.
Especially when the team is losing, you start 1-5.
Will be available to be asked.
Right. And now, Mara, again, he's not that public a guy, for those of you who don't know. But the team really is, they've been in a dire situation for 2 years now. They had this mercurial wide receiver who's banging his head against the fan. Did you see that the other day?
Yeah, I did.
That big metal fan, he's just smashing. I mean, he's nuts. We know this. But he's also a very good player, and I think he really cares about winning.
Right.
I don't think any of the antics on the sideline are necessarily destructive. I think he really cares about winning. So
I don't think an owner accomplishes anything by talking about players.
No, I don't.
Ever.
Right. I wouldn't be making those comments myself. But it seems like at every turn, he defends Eli and talks about how the rest of the players need to try harder. I don't like that.
I just don't think he should be talking.
Yeah, I'm not good with that in any way. Our next story is a quick one. You can just gasp when I say it.
All right.
You know what the asking price is for Amari Cooper, the receiver that Bradley McDougal knocked out the other day?
No.
Take a guess.
First-round draft
pick? First-round pick.
Gasp. Not going to happen.
How is that? I mean, come on.
It's the dysfunctional Raiders living in La La Land.
Think about Earl Thomas and what we thought the asking price might be there and what didn't get that deal done. Right? I mean, you think you're going to put
a two.
Right, you think you're going to, for Amari Cooper, a guy who's been on the decline for like 3 years, you think you're going to get a first-round pick?
Delusional.
Uh-uh. Never going to happen.
No, it's not.
All right, we're going to talk to El Omre next. How hard is it to find an owner that doesn't interfere in the football part of things? He's next.